This is a People First Radio podcast.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
Why can't we just make people go to addiction treatment? This is a question some may be asking in light of recent overdose deaths and other drug-related problems in Victoria, Nanaimo, and elsewhere in British Columbia. Is forcing people to get help an effective response to the problems caused by addictions? It turns out the evidence is murky and the research may not even be asking the right questions. Advocates of compulsory treatment argue that providing services and supports for addiction is more humane, economical, and effective than putting people in jail, firing them, or letting them hit rock bottom. These arguments have, quite reasonably, led to a large number of studies aimed at determining whether or not forcing someone to attend treatment works. After decades of research, why is this still such a controversial topic?
At this point, it's become apparent that the right question is not whether or not mandated treatment works, but under what circumstances might it work and how? And under what circumstances does it become yet another negative experience with the system, leading to further marginalization and drug-related harms? I spoke earlier this week with Karen Urbanowski. Dr. Urbanowski is a scientist with the Center for Addictions Research of British Columbia, an assistant professor in public health and social policy at the University of Victoria, and a Canada research chair in substance use, addictions, and health services research. There is compulsory addiction treatment in Canada. Can you give us a sense of how that happens?
There are programs that consist of providing people with an option for treatment rather than going to jail, depending on the type of offense that that they've committed. And those are called drug treatment courts. Your listeners may be familiar with those. There's also less formal programming that just consists of probation orders to seek an assessment or seek a counseling program for a certain number of sessions. And those are typically adjudicated on more of a case-by-case basis, depending on the person and their needs. There are programs that are leveraged through workplaces by employers. So people are given the choice to attend treatment with the sanction of losing their employment if they don't comply. There are also programs that involve compulsory treatment through child protection services, through social assistance programs, so as a requisite for receiving, say, welfare or workfare payments. And there's a wide variety. There's a lot of heterogeneity in the way that these programs operate, in the types of conditions that are placed upon people in their treatment.
One of the words that listeners are really familiar with is intervention. And one of the things you mentioned in a recent article was the notion of an ultimatum from a spouse, for example. Tell us more about that.
Addiction and substance misuse and related problems affect people in many different areas of their lives. And clearly one important area is their relationships, so with their spouses, with their parents, their family, friends. And so the idea that people around you are going to notice that there are things maybe wrong with you or the way that you're dealing with stresses and different aspects of your life related to your substance use. That's obviously going to be a very common pressure that people experience when they have addiction problems. The prevalence at which people who are entering a treatment program report that they were first talked to by someone in their family, it's very high, as you can imagine. So people are receiving external pressures from family and friends and their social networks to maybe enter a treatment program. And that's not uncommon. A more formal, sit-down intervention, the kind that we're familiar with from TV and the literature, is probably less common, but absolutely still happens.
Why is forced treatment or coerced treatment considered to be a controversial topic?
It brings up questions about the rights of the individual and whether an individual gets to decide what's best for them. Proponents of compulsory treatment may argue that if a person is experiencing addiction, they might not necessarily know what the best options are for themselves, and they might not necessarily be making the best decisions in their lives. Whereas people who are a bit more reticent and not an advocate of compulsory treatment may be a little bit more hesitant to have external bodies decide for a person whether or not entering a treatment program and what type of treatment program is right for them. And there's also some hesitation around the different types of monitoring programs and conditions that are placed upon treatment, so sanctions for not complying, and whether there are any safeguards in place to make sure that the person who is being forced into an addiction treatment program has some say in what happens to them as part of treatment, and whether they have some ability to shift the treatment plan if it's not working for them.
In some of your comments to the media, you address the issue of control, social control, and I'm just quoting, the notion of bringing someone who's perceived to be deviant into line. And you also pose the question, how much of this is about people getting better and how much of it is about reforming someone? I'm wondering if you could speak to that dynamic, that kind of moral judgment dynamic.
There's clearly a lot of stigma associated with addiction and with substance use in general, particularly for the substances that are currently illegal. It's difficult to tease apart the extent to which current policies and practices around compulsory treatment are always in the person's best interest versus actually representing another form of punishment, another way of trying to bring someone in line when they aren't behaving in a way that society considers to be pro-social. Whether it is a legitimate use of addiction treatment for this purpose is a good question. It's not really one that I'm able to consider or able to answer, because it requires a lot of thought from and input from bioethicists, say. The extent to which treatment is being used as a punishment or as a way of bringing people into line as opposed to a therapeutic intervention is a really good question. What we want to see happen, I think, with any compulsory treatment programs is that flexibility is there for individualized treatment planning, that there is a way for the treatment program to be adjusted to what the person needs, and also just for these programs in general to be available to people who are actually severely impaired by their substance use. There is some evidence from the research that's been done on this topic that a lot of the people who are being caught by this net of compulsory treatment programs are not necessarily the ones, the same people, who are most severely impaired by their addiction. And that's a bit concerning because there are still people falling through the cracks, even though we have compulsory treatment programs. So it's part of what I'm interested in my research is asking why that happens and whether there are different ways that treatment programs can be arranged so that they are capturing people who are most in need of their services and that are geared towards actually helping people recover as opposed to just being another experience that the person has that is just a negative one to add to the pile of indignities that the person is experiencing over their lives.
This is People First Radio. We've been speaking with Karen Urbanowski, a University of Victoria Assistant Professor and researcher with the Centre for Addictions Research of British Columbia. Is forcing people to get help an effective response to the problems caused by addiction? It turns out the evidence is murky and the research may not even be asking the right questions. It has become apparent that the right question is not whether or not mandated treatment works, but under what circumstances it might work and how. And under what circumstances does it become yet another negative experience with the system, leading to further marginalization and drug-related harms? Here's more from our interview with Karen Urbanowski.
You've said that the research on compulsory treatment is inconclusive and it's often methodologically weak. Is there more that you can you'd like to say about the research that has been conducted?
What most of the research in this topic has shown is that when you compare people who have been mandated to a treatment program, so they're under a treatment program because they've been formally forced to be there. They have a letter or some kind of documentation that their counselor has to submit to, say, the legal authorities or just a social assistance program. When we follow people over time, they tend to do just as well as people who are in treatment but who haven't got that documentation, who are not in a compulsory treatment program. And what this research has been interpreted as saying is that compulsory treatment works because people who are mandated to be there, they do not do any worse than people who are not mandated to be there. One problem with this research is that people who are not mandated to be there, as we spoke about earlier, they may have external pressures or ultimatums from their social network, so from a spouse, or they may be told that, by a lawyer that it's a very good idea for them to seek treatment because it's going to look better for their case. So they haven't been formally mandated per se, but they're still experiencing a lot of pressure to be there. What I would contend is that the key factor to consider in whether or not compulsory treatment works is to consider who it works for. How does motivation play a role? If someone does or does not feel as though they have been coerced to enter a treatment program, does that matter? Do the types of monitoring conditions that are put on the person attending the program, does that matter? Where the majority of past research has focused on just comparing people who are and are not mandated, I would contend that we actually have to get past that if we want to know whether or not compulsory treatment works. We have to actually figure out who it works for and under what circumstances. It's clearly difficult to get long-term data because you have to follow people for a longer period of time, including after they are no longer involved with treatment services. So it is a challenge, and I acknowledge that. Unfortunately, it's difficult to say whether or not somebody is experiencing stable recovery unless we do follow them for a long period of time. And so that's one of the reasons why it's difficult to say at this point whether compulsory treatment programs are associated with positive longer-term outcomes.
You told Victoria's Times Colonist newspaper, and I'm quoting you, "Is it such a good idea to round everybody up downtown and force them into treatment? Be careful because there can be unintended consequences." What did you mean by that?
So just to be clear, I do not think it's a good idea to round up people and force them all to be in a treatment program. There are a variety of things at play among people who are already marginalized by society, and certainly addiction is only one of those factors. The idea that you're going to solve every one of someone's problems with a short stint in addiction treatment, because the addiction treatment system is currently very much oriented towards short-term treatment episodes. You know, the idea that everyone will get better with a short stint in treatment is really misled. There are broader factors at play around racism, marginalization, colonialism, poverty, mental illness that has been untreated, that really do affect people's quality of life. And so the idea that it's simply just substances that are causing problems in people's lives is not the case. Again, I'd come back to the idea that we want to handle crises that occur in society, like, say, the downtown east side of Vancouver. We want to handle these issues with compassion and in a way that's likely to actually be effective for people, so that we're not just subjecting them to another indignity or something that is not actually going to help them in the long run. And that is how I would frame a blanket approach to solving problems of poverty and homelessness and untreated mental illness simply by just rounding people up and enforcing addiction treatment.
But you're not suggesting also that mandated addiction treatment is necessarily bad in itself.
Some people have been helped by going to addiction treatment. That's not in dispute, and that's why I say we need to figure out under what conditions our compulsory treatment programs are working and under what conditions they're not. What we find when we ask people who are mandated to a treatment program whether they perceive that they've been coerced to be there, some people say yes, that they have been coerced. They're not motivated to be there, and they have very low interest in participating. Other people do not report that. They report perceiving the option for treatment as an opportunity. And that's really important, and it's not something that we really understand all that well yet.
Karen Urbanowski, thanks very much for taking the time to join us.
You're welcome.
Dr. Karen Urbanowski is a scientist with the Center for Addictions Research of British Columbia, an assistant professor in public health and social policy at the University of Victoria, and a Canada research chair in substance use, addictions, and health services research. You can find out more online at uvic.ca.
People First Radio is an initiative of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society and broadcast on CHLY 101.7, radio from Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed are not necessarily those of the partnering organizations. Listen to People First Radio on demand. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpages.